We're going to continue this morning where we've been as we're going through the Sermon on the Mount. I'm going to skip around from time to time and look at different aspects of it and move around, not necessarily chronologically, but for a few minutes this morning I want us to, we're still in chapter 5, we didn't even cover all of the Beatitudes, but we'll get back to the unfinished portion at a later date. But for a few minutes, I want us to go to verse 27. And I don't know that I'll get through all of this portion of it this morning, but I want us to have these thoughts on our mind as we look at chapter 5, Matthew, verse 27. The Lord speaking. Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, Thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her, hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off, and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. Pretty strong words. Graphic even. What in the world is he telling us? What's under consideration? He starts out by and as we go through these, let me make this point, if I might, at the outset, that you're going to see a pattern in the way the Lord lays this out. He's going to say in one way or the other, it's been said of old, thus and so. But I say, you see the pattern?
Right.
You have learned thus and so, and it's been said thus and so, but I say. So are you saying, Brother Jerry, that he's refuting what's been said earlier? Absolutely not. What did he tell us? I come not to destroy the law, but I've come to fulfill it.
Right.
Remember that Jesus is the completion, and that word literally means the perfection of the law. He is the amplification of the law. And what he's going to do here, as he gives us these lessons and all other lessons, is he's going to amplify what we've already been given. He's going to build upon that and tell us, like in the parables, he's going to give us the meaning, and then he's ultimately going to give to us the real meaning, the embedded meaning of what's under consideration. And he starts out by saying, you have heard of old times that thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, where did you hear that? Well, you heard it in the Ten Commandments. Exodus chapter 20 says, thou shalt not commit adultery. Pretty plain. No gray area there. No lack of understanding. You can't misinterpret what God said there. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, what is adultery? Good question. We need to define it, don't we? Adultery would be a relationship of unfaithfulness outside the covenant. Outside the covenant. We would think of it most often as being a physical relationship outside the covenant. Well, what covenant are you speaking of? Marriage. That's why marriage is important. It's very important. In fact, the companion for what we see here, if you'll go with me to chapter 9, I believe it is, of the book of Mark, we're going to find that these same things are have been written here. Well, that goes on down a little further. That doesn't deal with this specific part of it. Because I stopped right there. Has committed that part in her heart. Well, yeah, it does speak of the hand and the cutting off of the hand. Did I read that part? Did I read 29 and 30? Okay, thank you, brother. So he does deal with that. And he says, verse 43 of chapter 9, "And if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell, unto the fire which never be quenched, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. And if thy foot offend thee, cut it off. And if thy eye," verse 47, "if thy eye offend thee, pluck it out." So he gives us here some pretty graphic instructions here. So we need to have and understand what's under consideration. It's important for us to understand that his word of adultery here is linked to, in 27 and 28, it's not distinguished from 29. He ties the two together. Important point. But I say unto thee that whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her in his heart. Y'all remember a few years ago, now this may be beyond some of your years, but I remember back in the 70s, we had a president of the United States from Georgia. His name was Jimmy Carter. And Mr. Carter talked about that verse of Scripture a lot, and you know what he got for it? He got a lot of ridicule. People tried to make fun of him for saying about committing sin in your heart, committing adultery in your heart. You know he was right. He was quoting God's Word. And he was saying, be careful what you look at. Be careful where you let yourself go, lest you commit adultery in your heart. And what's adultery? Unfaithfulness. That covenant of marriage is a three-way covenant. That's why marriage is important today. It's God-sanctioned, it's God-endorsed, it's God-instituted. And it's between a man and a woman and God. You know there's three to that proposal, there's three to that covenant. And it's possible for a man and a woman to commit adultery between themselves, but we're also able to commit adultery against the third party, which is God. Can we do that? Yeah, we can. It's important. I mean, it's possible for God's people to commit adultery and unfaithfulness to the third party of that covenant. And that's what we call spiritual adultery. And the Lord deals with that later on. But we find here, we're told not to commit adultery. There's consequences for it. But he says, when you look upon a woman to lust after her, you have already committed committed adultery in your heart. Now you know what the cynic would say about that today? Well, if I did it in my heart, I might as well go ahead and do it. Am I right? Is that what an unbeliever, is that what a cynic would say today? You betcha. Which is totally counter or perverting what God's Word is. And if thy right eye offend thee. Now he's linking the two together. He's giving us this as a package deal because one goes with the other. So this idea of cutting off parts of our body that people misinterpret and misapply, he's not dealing with a separate subject. He's dealing with the same subject that's on the table. And it's important that we know that. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out. and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell." He gives us the same picture here for the hand, or actually for any other part of our body. That if this is the offending part of the body, cut it off, get rid of it, and save the rest. Now, many of our Christian friends take this and they balk at it and they misunderstand what's under consideration. You understand what grace is all about. There are people today that will teach that what my hand does, independent of my body, can cast me into hell. So, well, that's not what the Lord's telling us here.
Right.
And I hope for us to illuminate that and amplify that so that we can see really what the Lord has under consideration for us here. You know, cutting off your arm or your hand or plucking your eye, that's pretty graphic. That's pretty final. Hard to sew a hand back on, right? Put an eye back in place. Is that what he means? I go back to the Old Testament. As we study cutting off people's hands and feet, all kinds of things like that, most of the time when that was done, it was done to the enemies of God's people. You go back and you look at how that played out. David's soldiers they did a lot of that. The enemies of God's people, they would cut their hands off and their feet off, you know, in addition to killing them. And this is graphic stuff. There is one instance in the 25th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, and I'm not going to go there. If you want to go read it, at a later time, you might want to do so. But the law of how God's people were to behave themselves was laid out. And in the 25th chapter, Moses writes this. He said, "Should two men engage in a fight to settle an issue?" I'm assuming this is basically a duel, you know, to settle some kind of a disagreement that they have, and they're fighting between the two of them. And if these two men are engaged in this conflict, and the wife of one of the men insert herself into the conflict and go and try to give an unfair, so I'm going to term it, an unfair advantage to her husband by grabbing her husband's opponent in a certain way, then that's unfair. And she couldn't do that. And you know the remedy by law? Cut off her hand. Whoa, yeah. And this isn't alliteration either. This is not a picture. This is literal. In fact, Moses goes ahead to write, "You are to cut off her arm, and no eye shall take pity upon her." No eye shall take pity upon her. But we come here to the New Testament, and we find the Lord telling us that if your hand offend you, cut it off. If your eye offends you, cut it off, or your foot, or anything else, cut it off. For it's better for you to be footless, or handless, or even blind, than to be in hell. So how should we properly interpret that? Notice there, he says if. That's the important word. If. If your eye offends you, cut it off. What do you do with your eyes? What's the purpose of the eye? It's vision. That's what God gives us today, is vision in these eyes. If your eye is looking upon something that's causing you to be compromised in temptation, gouge it out. Is that a literal summons? I don't believe so. I don't believe that's what He's telling us here. I believe what the Lord is telling us in some ways may be harder than what's under consideration. Remember a few weeks back when we were talking about David mourning for his sins? As we quoted the 51st chapter of the book of Psalms, which is David's repentant psalm for what he had done with Bathsheba. Y'all remember that? Where had David's problems started? Well, they were in Jerusalem. And remember, first of all, he was at a place he had no business being. That was Jerusalem. His faithful soldiers were out fighting the fight for their king, David. And where was David? Nowhere to be found. He was, meanwhile, back at the palace. He wasn't a faithful king at that point. He was absent without leave. He shouldn't have been there. He should have been with his troops. And I can't go inside his mind, and you can't either. But there's times, brethren, in our lives, there's times in my lives when I was absent without leave. There's times in my lives where I was at a place I had no business being. And we've all been there. But you know, Brother Walton, the Lord delivered us even in our disobedience, did He not? We've all been there. I look back on there and I say, but for the grace of God, I could have been just like David. But David was at a place that he had no business being. And you know, we go look in 2 Samuel and we find how this unfolds. David couldn't sleep one night. So what does he do? He goes and goes up on the roof. And he looks out. Of course, the palace would have been a larger building than everything around it. And he's on the roof. And it would be, I guess, the equivalent today of a skyscraper for us. And he was able to look. And what did he see? He saw a woman. And he didn't know her name. But he knew who she was. And he inquired as to who she was. She was bathing. Y'all see where the problem started? The problem was in his eye. What did he do wrong? He didn't pluck out his eye in that figurative sense that's under consideration. He should have... Well, first of all, what he should have done was the rest of the night. And you know what? If he were here today, he would tell us so. I should have gone, got back in my bed. Then the next morning, I should have gone found my troops and led them as God would have me to do. But you know, that comes from experience. But he did some things that he should not have done. And there was a hell involved because of his actions. There was a hell. Plucking it out. Pluck out that eye. Remove your sight from the circumstances and the situation that causes you to be in that environment. Translation, don't be there. It's necessary today, brethren, for you and I, if we're going to be the kind of sheep that the Lord would have us to be, if our kingdom walk in this day and age is going to be what the Lord would have it to be, we're going to have to do some plucking. We're going to have to sever some limbs that are causing problems. Understanding that the limb is not the issue. The eye wasn't even the issue. You know, it's said today that, you know, in the Mideast, according to the Muslim community, that law is still in effect where they will do that for theft and for different things.
Right.
Okay? We're seeing that play out today in America, by the way, and I'm not fixing to get political. But we have many youth in America today that are saying the problem's the gun. And they're saying, cut off the arm. The arm never was the problem. What have I said from here? We don't have a gun problem. We got a heart problem
right.
in America.
Right.
Can't cut the heart out. So we got some sincere, well-meaning, yet error-prone people, many of them youth, that are saying the problem's the gun. The problem's not the gun.
That's right.
And that's what the Lord's saying right here. Same message on a different level. Can you see the parallel? Well, where's the problem? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? No. The problem's here. Right here. Do you know that everything that you and I see in our supercomputer, which is our brain, instantly creates an image? You know that? Have you thought about just how quick you and I can conjure up an image of anything? Make a nanosecond look like slow speed. Our brains are such a wonderful thing that God has given us. What's that got to do with this? That word image is created in the mind. And it's created by our environment,
right,
where we find ourselves and where we let ourselves be.
Right.
I remember one time when I was a youth, I was at a place I had no business being. And I had to explain to my mom and daddy why I was there. And I came up with some reasons. And you know what? It never was my fault. Never was my fault. I was kind of like Adam. You know, Lord, that woman you gave me, it's her fault. And actually, Lord, it's your fault because you gave me the woman. I'm just along for the ride. In fact, that's kind of the way my excuse went. You see where that's going? I wasn't driving, I was riding. But I ended up someplace I had no business being. And you know, I don't have to go out somewhere. I can be that way at home. Our minds and eyes can see things today in the privacy of our homes that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, unimaginable. When we live in a day and an age where I can have a satellite beam stuff into my house, 500, 1,000 channels, it's left to what? The imagination. But in fact, there's the amplification of that word that we were looking at that creates so much problems for us today. I don't know if I've ever told y'all this. I used to have a woman. I was in the business world. I had a woman, had a lady that worked for me. Very productive, very capable person. She was a good employee, a good team player. Everything was going well. Her job performance slacked off. Things got to going bad. Of course, I knew her and her husband. Y'all remember when they first came out with satellite dishes? I mean, we're talking about either the early or the mid-80s. I don't remember exactly. They just come out with dishes. And you talk about high-dollar items. I'm telling you, you would spend as much as a car today for a dish. guess what they did? She was making good money. He made good money. They had more money than they had sense. So they go down to the bank and they buy one of these dishes. They got it on a note. In fact, based on their note, it should be paid out about now. Okay, you got the picture? And it was creating turmoil in the home. He was sitting up all night watching pornography. She was trying to go to bed to make the living. He couldn't get to work. You know, you say, well, that's y'all's business. Well, when it gets to affecting our business relationships, sadly, it becomes my business.
Right.
I didn't invite it.
Right.
Didn't want it, but I had to deal with it. I said, Kathy, what's the problem? I mean, she laid it all out. I said, so let me get this straight. You're making a note every month on a dish that you can't afford. Yeah. So that your minds can become totally depraved and polluted. That's pretty much it. That's not isolated. If you think that is a one-time phenomenon in America, let's not be deceptive. It's going on everywhere. The only difference is we've done away with the dishes. Are you careful what you let go in your mind? Are you careful what you let yourself see and hear and be a part of? You say, well, I know how far I can go. Give me a break. Are we that delusional? Give me a break. You say, well, that's not going to affect my spiritual life. Who are you kidding? It's an addiction that takes hold. And I'm not just talking about pornography. There's a whole plethora of things. We got to be so careful what we let ourselves see. We've got to discipline ourselves. And I got to say, God, this is Your temple. This is Your body that You gave me. And I'm going to be careful what I let go into it. Easy to say, hard to do. Easy to say, hard to do. You ever wonder why, and we lament the fact that in this day and age, talking to a preacher not too long ago, he talked about talking to another brother who had grown up, and he talked about in his age that he had grown up in a time when in the middle of the worship service, or not in the middle of the worship service, but at the appropriate time, men and women of the congregation would stand up and they would give a testimony. A witness. In the Primitive Baptist Church, yes. Primitive Baptist and witness. Yes, those two words do go together. And they talked about how the Lord had delivered them from an occasion or a circumstance, or how the Lord had blessed them in their daily life to the edification of the body and to the glory of God. Are we too sophisticated for that today? Or do we think we're too sophisticated? Do we quench the Spirit? If the Lord's ever led you to stand up at the appropriate time and say, I just want you at the church to know how the Lord has blessed me, in this, how He's delivered me through a trial, or He's given me something and it's to His name's honor and glory for that, are we too sophisticated for that? Have we become that cold and callous? And I'm not just talking about El Buffalo. I'm talking about all of God's people. to where these things are not relevant to our lives today. This is not just a Sunday morning thing. This is 24/7. It's not what we do, it's who we are. May we never forget that. May we never fail to understand that you've been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your bodies. There's a technical term that I believe you know this, Brother Pete. Garbage in, garbage out. That's kind of a computer term, all right? Garbage in, garbage out. Does that describe what we look at? How much of what we allow ourselves to look at is of absolutely no benefit in our lives? And all it does is draw us further away from the kingdom and takes our eyes off of spiritual blessing. That's what Jesus was telling us here. You say, well, Brother Jerry, I don't sit in front of the TV and do all that. Well, you really? Okay, well, just whip out that little thing. It's about that big. How many times have we looked at it today? What we've done is we've taken a blessing of God and it has become a curse.
That's right.
Your cell phone has become a curse because you're addicted to it. If you look at it over a few times a day. And that, by the way, wasn't by accident. I was looking the other night, they were talking on Facebook and Google. They've got high dollar scientists and programmers, and their purpose, I don't know if you saw this, but their goal is to addict you to their phone. Has it worked? Give them a bonus. Give them a raise. Because that we're looking at what they want us to do, and they're affecting us. It's affecting our behavior. In fact, Brother Jerry, in your secular life, you were a psychologist. Is not a psychologist one that studies behavior? That's what he does. Behavior. And how our behavior is affected by these things. What's the answer, Brother Jerry? Go with me to the book of Daniel. I don't know if I've ever discussed this here before, but the first chapter is a sad chapter. It's the story of Nebuchadnezzar having taken God's people captive. Y'all remember the three Hebrew children? We identify them by their Babylonian names. Their Hebrew names were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Yet, they were here, and they were in the court of the king, because he basically wanted to fatten them up. He admired their gift that they had as the Hebrew children. Verse 5, chapter 1, and the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and to the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. And then it gives their name. Now here's one problem with what the king gave them. And you and I have no doubt that what Nebuchadnezzar had as the king of Babylonian was the best of the best of the best. It was. Best meat, best food, best wine, best of everything. And he told these slaves, these servants of Israel, to eat that. Look what they said, verse 7, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat. As well-meaning as the king was, he did it in ignorance. But these people who had knowledge said to themselves, if we eat this, we will be doing that contrary to what God has told us. So here's what they did. He made an agreement with them. He says that we will not eat this. And in verse 12, he says, "Prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink." So what are they on? They're on a restricted diet. We know about those. A restricted diet. We want to be careful what we let ingest, what we let ourselves digest, what we let ourselves look at. "Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants." So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat of the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzer took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. Now, there's an analogy here that we want to draw. There's things that we eat of the world, and there's things that we eat of the spirit, of the spiritual, that do not defile us. And they ate of things that did not defile them. You know what happens when the lust of the flesh is... What did Peter tell us about the lust of the flesh? Peter said in his epistle, the lust of the flesh wars against the soul. Wars against the soul. And I'm not just talking about natural adultery. I'm talking about anything that's contrary to God's spiritual law. And there's things in our lives, brethren, that we might have to pluck out from time to time. We might have to separate ourselves from them. If our money becomes an idol, pluck it out. Our family might become an idol. I'm talking about our natural family. It might become an idol to us. My job. That can become an idol. We might have to pluck it out. And I've just named a few. There's a whole list of things, brethren. And what is it? Anything in our lives that's between us and the Lord. Anything. "Do not I love thee, O my God? Behold my heart and see, and turn each cursed idol out that dares to rival thee." Is that our prayer? Lord, give me the strength and the grace in my life that I would let nothing come between me and you and my service to you and my kingdom walk and my love for your church which is in the world today. May that be our prayer. May that be our desire. Anyway, after 10 days, they were able to tell the difference. You know, y'all, it's a hard thing to go to the movie today. Y'all know that? Y'all been lately? You got to be careful what you let yourself see. You know what happens to us? We become hardened to that. We become hardened to it. And our hearts get hard. And then we wonder why the Lord feels so far away. Lord, it's not you. It's me. I'm the problem. I'm the problem. Are you willing to say that? Are we willing to say, "Lord, that's my responsibility. You've given me everything that you've given me. Let me be focused upon you. Let me eat pulse and water. Let me turn aside from the things of the flesh and the carnality of the world." Several years ago, a preacher was preaching a discourse along these same lines. I don't remember, but I remember there's one line that I remember out of his discourse, Brother Pete. He talked about, he was feeling, riding down the interstate, and he was feeling close to the Lord. He flipped on his radio. May not be a good thing. He said, "I love country music." That's what he said. "I love country music." And he said, y'all bear in mind, this was several years ago. He said, there came a tune on the radio, and it was like the tune, and you're going to remember the song, at least us older ones are. And he says, the tune was real nice. He says, but I got to listen to the words. And you know what the title of the movie was? Torn Between Two Lovers. You got it? Pluck it out. You say, well, Brother Jerry, that's just one little song. Y'all, it's the cumulative effect. Don't ever think it's not.
Right.
It's one built upon another, and sooner or later our hearts get so hard and callous and carnal and worldly that something spiritual comes along and we can't even recognize it. Satan's won. He likes it. Pluck it out. The Lord said it'd be better for you to do without those things than enter into the enter in with one foot rather than to be in hell. Now you and I both know, because we believe in the doctrines of grace, and we believe in according to God's word. You know that He's bought you and paid for you. You're a child of the King. You're heaven bound. Your identity has been transformed, as we just discussed. And there's nothing that can separate you from the love of God. You are heaven bound. Did you know that? And as our Christian friends outside our faith community would say, once saved, always saved. Okay? We believe that, but you've got to understand the context for that. So you're heaven bound. But that doesn't mean that Satan won't try to latch hold of you while you're here.
Right.
So what's the answer? Pluck it out. Not easy to do. Hard to do. Hard to do. That's all I have. Lot said, hard to do. You know who I'm preaching to? The man in the mirror. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to me. My biggest enemy is me. My biggest obstacle is Jerry Williams. Lord, give me the grace to do what you profess. Give me the strength to overcome, that I may in some small way glorify you and not get entrapped in the wiles of the devil next week and beyond. In fact, it's not confined to next week. It can start today, can't it? Start right now. So Satan, he can come right in here, can't he? Get in that mind. What did Paul tell us? For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations. There's that word again. And every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of Christ. May we be blessed, brethren, to cast down imaginations and every other idle place. That's what a high thing is a place of idolatry that's against the knowledge of the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Do we have a hymn, Brother Walton?
158, when I was a babe, the one was brought.
Stand here and sing this hymn. If there was... be one here that wants to unite with the church, you can come and tell it to